In this episode, my guest Robert Johnson from Microboost explains where are we at now with the legalization of psychedelic mushrooms. I don't know how many times I've met people throughout the years in all my gyms that have talked about someone in their family who has had some sort of story of PTSD, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and how microdosing psychedelic mushrooms has changed their lives. So I wanted to interview Robert and specifically go into detail of theories he has heard out there, and also where are we at now and when will they be legal for the rest of us. So if you're interested, stay tuned. How's it going? This is Brad Williams with Over 40 Fitness Hacks, the podcast where I help you, being over 40, to fight the aging process without giving up your social life. I've been a personal trainer and gym owner for over 14 years, and I specialize in helping the over 40 crowd get to their goals. If you need a little bit of guidance, check out my show notes. I have a link to schedule a free 15-minute Zoom call, and you can ask all the questions you want. But enough of that. Let's get on with the episode. This is part 2 of 3 of an interview I did with Robert Johnson for Microboost. Well, cool. Robert, let's move on to the fun part, the psychedelics. I remember in high school and college, people trying out stuff. It was more kind of the raw form. But nowadays, you're seeing people with chocolate bars and that kind of stuff. And who knows where they're getting this stuff? Probably Canada, right? Because in the U.S., it's not legalized yet. And hopefully it will be. But I know from the last 15 years of being in my industry, a gym owner, personal trainer, this is like the 8th time I've had someone come up to me and talk about an experience of microdosing with mushrooms and how it saved their life. A lot of them were drug addicts or alcoholics, and some were just depression. And all these stories kept funneling in just to my gym. That's what kind of put me a little shedding some light on there. So what can you tell us about it?
Well, I mean, I think that some pieces of media have been really influential as of late. The Fantastic Fungi documentary, Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, and a bunch of celebrities, including Gwyneth Paltrow and Joe Rogan, and all these people talking about their own mushroom experiences. And then also the political move to decriminalize, legalize, medicalize mushrooms. I think cannabis was really a gateway drug to legalizing more of these plant-based substances that have been much maligned for decades in this country. But now, and I'm so excited to see that a bunch of activists from all different generations got together and one state by one state legalized or medicalized cannabis down to the point where I think it's over 40 states that have some form of legal or medical cannabis. And mushrooms have followed suit really rapidly. It took a long time for cannabis to, I think, break into the mainstream. But I think that really played a big effect, right? If people realize like, oh, and especially maybe if someone hadn't even tried cannabis before, right? Because it was illegal. And now it's legal in their state. They try it. Oh, wow, this is great. How come this has been illegal? What else has the government been holding out on? But I think similar to how cannabis became accepted, wasn't first off just for adult use and people saying like, oh, if you're 21, you should be able to make your own decisions and get high. Rather, it was a step where at first it was like medical patients, right? And I was in the early days of California medicalization and then legalization, and activists are rolling out their grandma with glaucoma or some sort of terminal illness that they need cannabis for the pain. And that became an eye opener, like, right? Why shouldn't a veteran who served our country be able to smoke grass or take mushrooms for their PTSD? And because of the change of the tide and this what seems to be this move towards legalization in this country and in other countries, a ton of research has gone back into mushrooms. And before psychedelics were criminalized by Nixon in 1969, there were thousands of research papers, hundreds of conferences, both national and international conferences for psychedelics, for psychotherapists, well, using psychedelics to break through with people that had treatment-resistant depression or PTSD, these really strong mental issues that you needed a really strong tool to really be able to give them a new perspective and change their mind. And so I think that the confluence of celebrities and big media outlets talking about it. Now, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars pouring into research, proving that this is helpful for people, and not just helpful, but like revolutionary, radically changing their outlook and their perspective. And not like pharmaceuticals, where you might need to take something for a year and you have to weigh the side effects versus the benefits. But in some cases, people having breakthrough experiences and one usage of mushrooms. So I think as these stories get out there and become more accepted, and, you know, alcohol becomes less and less popular, and instead of everybody having their cocktail at the end of the day, I hear about moms going out. And there was an article in Wall Street Journal not too long ago and interviewing a woman saying like, oh yeah, I go out with eight girlfriends and seven of them have microdose chocolates or some product in their purse. It's amazing that it's happening so fast. I think one of the big differences is back when cannabis started to become decriminalized and medicalized, there was really no infrastructure, right? There was maybe big growers and stuff that have been operating in the Humboldt counties of the world for decades, but they're really these mom and pop operations. But now as cannabis has become mainstream and bigger money and bigger infrastructure, I found that 99% of people producing psychedelic mushroom products in the United States now are former or current cannabis manufacturers.
Yeah, okay.
They have the infrastructure for making the edibles, the gummies, the chocolates, whatever it is. And as cannabis has legalized, the profitability is less and less. One, you got taxes and regulations that you didn't have before.
Competitors.
And also, yeah, lots of competitors. And the reason why it was so expensive and profitable for so long was the illicitness, right? So if you have nothing to fear, then venture capital and big money can get into it. And so I think a lot of people that were in cannabis or are still in cannabis are just looking for the next thing.
How much longer till we get to that point where, just like cannabis, where first you had to have a card by a doctor and then eventually morphed into like pretty much everyone can do it, depending on your state? Like, how far away are we in the mushroom psychedelic world?
Well, it's already happening. I mean, just had two states legalize.
Colorado, right?
For medical use, for assisted therapy use, Colorado and Oregon.
Okay.
And there's a dozen or more cities that have decriminalized, from Ann Arbor to Oakland, Santa Cruz, Arcata. So we're already moving in that direction. People ask me all the time to look in that crystal ball and tell them when we're going to be able to order chocolates online or go to a mushroom dispensary. But that too is happening as well. There are what are called mushroom churches now, which is essentially the mushroom dispensary of our times. And it started with this guy, Dave Haas, in Oakland. And he opened the first mushroom church. Oakland was the first city to decriminalize mushrooms. In fact, I worked with him in the cannabis industry back since like 2010, right? And he opened a cannabis dispensary in San Jose in 2010 when San Jose was completely against him. It was illegal to open one there. But I think the second or third biggest city in California. And I remember sitting with him and he said, if I'm not being arrested, I really could be doing more, you know?
Yeah, totally. How much research is getting pumped into psychedelics for microdosing purposes for like PTSD and some of the other psychoactive issues? Is there much action going on there, or is it still dulled down right now?
No, I mean, I have a presentation at the psychedelic investor wave peaked about a year and a half or 2 years ago, but there still are, I think the five biggest companies in psychedelics are spending between $20 and $90 million a quarter on research and development of unique compounds, right? Because you can't patent nature.
Yeah.
You can't patent a mushroom, but they're looking to patent different twists on psilocybin or MDMA. So, I mean, the answer is it's hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars that are being invested. And even Joe Biden recently, I wrote a last article for Rolling Stone was about how Joe Biden just approved 10 million PTSD therapy for veterans.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It's huge. $10 million was really a drop in the bucket with the amount of veterans suffering with PTSD, but it's progress.
Yeah, you know? That's all we need. What's funny is I saw this little Google image about all the different types of drugs, and it's like a little chart, and it ranks all the different types of drugs from alcohol all the way down to shrooms, and basically saying how horrible are they for people who use that stuff to affect other people and affect themselves. Like, what does it do to your own body? And by far, alcohol, number one, people get in fights, murders, stabbings, and then their own body, what it does to them, shuts their liver down, all that kind of stuff. And mostly because it's more readily available. And then it goes like meth and all the other ones down. And bottom two, cannabis, but still mushrooms were lower than cannabis for affecting others and affecting yourself. Like literally nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that chart you're talking about, and I can't recall if pharmaceuticals are on there, but those are probably right up there with alcohol.
Oh, they were up there with the methamphetamines and stuff.
Yeah, huge killer.
That's crazy.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, everyone. And I just wanted to say that if anything from this episode resonated with you and it makes you think of somebody, please share and help someone out. You know, I do a lot of variety of topics, and not everything I say works for everyone, but there is going to be that one episode that makes you think of somebody that could help. So I really appreciate it. And just off of looking back the last 3 years of all the episodes I've done, I think three really stand out that I think could help a lot of people. And that's episode 71 with Dr. Amy, where we go into diaphragmatic breathing and how that can really help with your pain levels, and did for me. Episode 195, I had Tim Kelly on, and we really dove deep into microminerals and how important that is and how horrible the American diet is. And the third being episode 292, a more recent one, where I talk about the three tips I would do to help out your lower back. And one of those is just a simple YouTube video that my chiropractor gave me that just took me to the next step of lowering my pain, giving me more range of motion. And I just want to put that out there to check those out if you're having any of these issues. And like I said, thanks for listening.
If you'd like a little bit of help checking out your diet and your current routine, I'd be happy to help. I always do a free 15-minute Zoom consultation for anyone, no strings attached, just to see if I can help point you in the right direction. So if you're interested, check out the show notes. The link is at the top.